Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg. All sports.
The throw home. He is safe.
All the time. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us this morning live at sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe. And welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning. Action-packed 2 hours coming ahead with you this morning. Coming up in about 1 hour's time from the Ottawa Citizen, we're going to be joined by James Gordon. He'll be talking about all things Senators-related. Really sort of a disappointing start to the season for the Senators. Not a lot of time left for them to turn it around, so we'll talk to James and see what's going on there. Just a ton of activities in the NHL these days. Hopefully, we're going to try and reach Cody Eakin. He's playing for the Canadian World Junior entry. He's going to hopefully try and get a hold of him at some point in the next 2 hours. Richard, Ezra, hey now.
Hey now, Drew.
Hey now, Drew. What's up?
Not too much. How you boys doing?
Good this morning, Drew. It's we're back on a 10 this week as opposed to the 9 last week. The extra hour of sleep has served me well.
That's good. You look a little bit more refreshed, I got to say, Richard.
Do I?
Yeah, your smile's a little bit more vibrant. When you give me that little wink with your eye, I got a little bit of warmth in there. That's a nice feeling. Should we start with a recap of last night's games?
Why don't we?
Okay, let's do that. I'll tell you what, this might be rock bottom for the Devils last night. It might actually, it's hard to say. They've been so many low points. Yeah. This might be the final low point. Losing on home ice 3-1 to the Nashville Predators. Nashville's a good team.
Hottest team in the league too right now.
I know, but it's embarrassing at this point. There's no effort there. There's no heart.
Yeah, nothing.
There's nothing going on there. It's a 3-1 victory. It was a quiet night in the NHL last night, only four games, but it was a good win for the Predators and just another shameful, depressing almost performance by the Devils.
Yeah, depressing year for the Devils at this point to write off. They're done.
Yeah, that's it. You can just give up on them.
Just a fork in them.
And no point in firing John McClain at this point.
No, not at this point. It's not salvageable.
Exactly. So, see what you have. Take him through till next year and see what you're going to get next year. That's all. In Florida last night, big performance. A huge first period for the Panthers, and then from there on it was just smooth sailing. 4 goals in the first period for the Panthers. They tripled the Sabres, and that's not something you get to hear in hockey very often.
Especially against the Sabres.
That's right. They tripled the Sabres 6-2 last night. The ageless wonder, Marty Riesner, with 2 goals. What is he, 40? 45?
No, he's not that old, Drew. He's probably in his early 30s there.
Yeah, I know. But he just seems like he's been around for absolutely ever.
To be able to kick Ryan Miller out of a game, you have to be proud of that. Florida, again, this is a team that is not exactly lighting it up the scoreboard, so they're due to for a little more goals than they've scored, so they'll take their 6 goals and run with it.
Yeah, exactly right. In the marquee game of last night, that would be the Detroit-Chicago game, which took place at the United Center in Chicago. Mm-hmm. The Blackhawks proved that they're not going to go quiet. They're not going to relinquish their crown and their championship in the Western Conference and the Stanley Cup without a fight. They really beat up on the Red Wings 4-1 there. Just a very impressive performance by the Blackhawks last night.
Very impressive performance. And you know what? I mean, this is a team, again, still the top-end talent's there. Maybe the bottom half of the roster isn't as strong as it was before, but if they can get goaltending that can keep them to the opponent even 3 goals or under, they're still a team to be reckoned with, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that's what they proved last night. I mean, I think it was a good test for them, and they came through with flying colors.
Absolutely. Detroit arguably is the best team in the National Hockey League right now, and has been the entire year.
That's right. So good for the Blackhawks last night. And then the final game from last night, a real sort of an old-school fire wagon-type hockey game, went to overtime, and the Colorado Avalanche beat the Ottawa Senators 6-5 in overtime last night.
Really went back and forth, Drew. That was an exciting game. Is there a mixtape over there?
Are you going to start scratching or something?
Hold on. Tim's helping me out. We're trying to get my headphones. I'm not getting anything here, so I thought I would just...
You thought you'd just, you, you just start here. Punching the microphone? Yeah, is that what you thought you'd do? That's an interesting strategy.
The Avalanche, Senators get a 5-4 lead with about 5 minutes left to play on the road. You have to be able to win those games.
The Senators had the lead a couple times in that game,
yep.
And they just couldn't, they just couldn't hold on to it.
Good teams win those games. Good teams don't give up one goal leads going to third period. Never mind 5 minutes left in the third period. You have to be able to clamp down. You have to be able to execute it. And they lost. I mean, they'll take a point on the road. Okay, fine. But that's a game that you look back on, and if they miss the playoffs, which I'm pretty sure they will,
yeah.
And there's a couple of points here or there, that's going to be one of them. They're going to say, hey, you know what? Got to have that game.
That's right. So, that's...
Colorado, on the other hand, Drew, up-and-coming team, as we've seen. They've been scoring a lot this year. They have great young talent. Right now, half their talent is injured, but not that much. But there's been a lot of injuries. Obviously, they miss Chris Stewart.
Yeah.
He's really come into his own this year. But Matt Duchene is one of the studs there. I believe Stastny missed yesterday's game, too. So... If Matt Duchene can turn up performances like that with the likes of Stastny and Duchene missing, then it bodes well for the...
He's a special talent, is what he is.
Second overall pick?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And he's just proving it. He's
dominating Tavares in the points right now, but Tavares is playing out and might as well be playing Shinny at the...
I think he's playing in the ECHL this year. I'm not sure, though. I mean, that's just a bad scene in New York, obviously.
His point, by the way, just as an aside, his point totals reflect that. John Tavares, I don't think he's got... He certainly hasn't tabulated more than 3 or 4 points over the past, 3-4 weeks. It's a disaster on Long Island.
Well, that's not. That shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody at this point in time.
No, certainly
but,
isn't.
That's
the
way
disaster
it
is. Even. I mean, by the way, I'm back now.
Eddie, you're back.
Eddie, thanks. How was the DJing gig?
Well, Drew, you stole my microphone input, so.
And
had to help me out.
None of that actually happened for the listeners. Absolutely none of that happened.
I mean, just on
there
the
was a, there was a steal.
Just on the topic of Long Island, I don't think disaster is the right word. I would prefer to use the word mockery.
Fair enough.
Mockery apocalypse? Any of those?
Well, it's a mockery of the NHL. I mean, the French, I mean...
Yeah, Jack Capuano's sure helping.
Yeah. I'm sure he, well, because it was obviously Scott Gordon was the problem there.
Yeah,
that was apparent to everybody. Previewing tonight's game, I mean... Sort of the game that jumps out at me in this game. It just doesn't happen often enough when the Maple Leafs make that West Coast trip. And they're on the midst of one right now. They played in Edmonton a couple nights ago.
Mm-hmm.
They played in Calgary, of course. We'll touch on the Dion Phaneuf return to Calgary. And tonight they're playing in Vancouver. You just don't see those. It's a real shame that you don't see the East Coast Canadian teams going out west often enough. And it's a black mark on the NHL schedule maker that they can't figure it out.
Necessarily. First of all, I have an issue with the schedule being balanced. I'll let you get into the contents of this game. But realize this, guys. Every team gets 3 at-large games a year, and the Leafs 3 at-large games a year are in the West Coast. So really, they should only be playing there every other year, and they're actually playing there every year, if not twice a year.
Well, they should. I don't care how you have to figure out the schedule. It used to be... that you played, no matter what everything else, above and beyond everything else was, you played each team at least once at home and once on the road.
Right.
That should be your base. And then from there, you can figure out all the divisional games and everything else. That's your base. One game at home against each team, one game on the road against each team.
I'm in agreement with that. I'm just saying, at least the NHL is going on its way to give the 3 at-large games to the Toronto, to Vancouver, Calgary, and Edmonton.
Yeah, but it took them long enough to get to that. As
Don't
want to
get in the
about
the
that?
Rant there, Drew.
Sorry, yeah, I know. Ezzy, do you have something to say about that game?
It's funny, Drew. You mentioned, the Toronto trip to the West Coast doesn't happen enough. I would prefer it didn't happen at all. I mean, the Toronto Maple Leafs going through Western Canada, it was like the Beatles were, touching down at Winnipeg International Airport. I mean, let's calm down a little bit. I think the only reason why, this was, made out to be anything was because of, Phaneuf's connection to the cities of Edmonton and Calgary. Phaneuf's from Edmonton, and obviously he was making his big return to Calgary. And it's no surprise that Calgary dominated Toronto. Calgary actually in the West has a chance at making the playoffs. Toronto, I mean, unless they go on a crazy run, I mean, they're going to be
Both
probably end
are.
Up in a 9th or 10th or something like that at the best. But it's for the Toronto fans in these cities, Drew. I mean. Why is it such a big deal? There's no rivalry really that I can think of between any of these
the
teams.
It's the Leafs. It's the Leafs and the Habs.
The Oilers game, you watch the Oilers game, and it's the
Habs.
Fans are chatting.
I agree with, but not
no,
the Leafs.
No, it's the same thing.
The fans are chatting, "Let's go Oilers," and then between that, the break,
"Let's go Leafs."
Let's go Leafs. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's because anytime the Habs or the Leafs came to Winnipeg, there was always a ton of fans cheering for them. It drove me crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Habs more than the Leafs. But well, of course it's annoying. But those are the teams people grew up on.
Yeah.
The original six and then until the expansion era began. Anyways, the top story in the NHL this past week. Let's get to that now that we're done with the recap and the preview of some of tonight's games. Chris Pronger injured out 4 to 6 weeks, needs foot surgery. you know, there's some thought that this might be a blessing in disguise for the Flyers if they have to go on a, if they go on a long playoff run. You know, he's going to be a little bit fresher than he was last year at this point. You know, two questions. Do they have enough depth to handle this injury?
Yes.
Yes. You know, when what's the second question?
I actually don't remember what the second question was.
When your defense, you know, when you can put a guy like you know, Kimmo Tiivanen into the number one slot, you have a depth as a luxury that you have over many teams. You know, Matt Carl can play some more minutes. Braden Coburn can play some more minutes. Mezeros has played predominantly top 4 minutes his entire career. He can move up. Sean O'Donnell can shoulder more minutes. And you know, they really aren't going to be in trouble at all. I mean, last year they played basically the entire season with very weak 5 and 6 defensemen, so they have to play 4 to 6 weeks without really a top, an NHL caliber 6 defenseman. I don't worry about Philadelphia at all. You know, the effect of Pronger not being there, sure, that'll cost him, you know, a point or two in the standings for sure, because he's one of the best defensemen in the National Hockey League still, and he plays against the other team's best players. But this team is well equipped to deal with an injury.
Richie, why should Philadelphia Flyers fans be worried? Oscar Bartulis is coming up through the pipeline.
Hey,
that's who they called up, Drew.
Is that exciting?
Well, he's a stud.
He likes his name.
It's a great name, but
as he likes his name, or Oscar likes his. Likes
I haven't
his
talked
name.
To Oscar about his own name.
No, but you know, in all seriousness, this Philly team. And Kevin Allen, a good friend of this program, wrote about this. And, you know, I thought he did a great job on his blog of writing about this.
USA Today.
This team is it's so talented and so deep. And the Matt Carls and Andre Mezeros, is a new addition to this team. But, you know, Matt Carl and Braden Coburn, the way that they have improved their play, when you have a Chris Pronger on their team, their development, is coming along really nicely, and they have a lot of games coming up against, you know, Atlantic Division rivals, but the Rangers
well,
and the
West
Devils.
They're going to West Coast, though, right? They go to West Coast first.
Yeah, but they're fine. I wouldn't be surprised if the Flyers, you know.
Right now, the Flyers are
kept up their winning percentage without Pronger in the
right line. Now, they're at the top of the Eastern at the top of the Eastern Conference, and they're running away with the Eastern Conference right now. They're up by 7 points.
Yeah.
You know, if they drop back, which you would expect, because you know the ramifications of losing Pronger on your defense are well documented. If they drop back to third or fourth, let's say, because after these 6 weeks are up, and they finish in that spot come the playoffs, are they still not better off giving Pronger these 6 weeks off? Almost
But Drew, they're not really giving him 6 weeks off. He's getting surgery.
There's the difference between he's not on the ice. He's not facing the bumps
now,
and the grinds of an entire action.
On a positive note, you get the rest time that the rest of his body can rest. The risk, of course, is that the foot doesn't heal as well as you want it to, and he's playing a little bit more injured. Overall, I think the surgery will probably go well. I think that this is probably a blessing in disguise for this team, because you're looking to make a deep playoff run. Chris Pronger's over 35 now. They went deep last year. As you can see, Crosby's, Detroit's, all those guys, they really rejuvenated after a year of not going to the finals.
That's right.
So I think it should help them.
Okay, let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to touch on some more news and notes from around the NHL world. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we'd like to welcome Michael Remus to the program. He's over in the other room. You can join Michael in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show chat room at www.illegalcurve.com. Feel free to send us your messages via Twitter at Illegal Curve, or you can always email us, drew@illegalcurve.com. I think Remus rolled his way out of a ditch, and that's why he's a couple minutes late this morning.
Well, it's awesome that Remus is on the show. Obviously, he got the bat signal that you were putting out there.
Yeah, the bat signal being the phone call. I was calling him at about 20 after 8, telling him I'm picking him up, and then bailed out hard on the ride. What do you think an appropriate punishment for Remus is? Should he have to buy me breakfast?
It's to buy you breakfast.
Yeah, I think it was a breakfast-related punishment. Sure. He's giving me the thumbs up. Yeah. All right, free breakfast. Steak and eggs, here we come.
He's never been in such a good mood.
I'll tell you what, this has been a big morning already. We're going to save the special treat that was in studio for us until later on in the show.
Yes.
But between that and between a free breakfast from Remus now, things are looking up my way. That's what I can tell everybody.
And, we walked in here to
that's
the studio.
Don't say the special. That's the special treat. We're prepping it for later on.
I want to steal your thunder
No. It's a late show. It's you got to build up the anticipation so that people will stay with us. I know they'll stay with us anyways, but they'll really stay with us throughout the entire show on pins and needles, waiting to hear the special gift that was waiting for us in studio this morning.
You know what? I'm happy Remus is here, but I don't particularly like you profiting off of his being late. I think we should all profit. You're getting a free lunch breakfast.
We should get a free
drink. What are we getting?
I have to buy you guys coffee.
Fair
although
enough.
Ezzy bailed on lunch, so it doesn't matter.
I have a family commitment.
Doesn't matter. This is your only family
It's an organized bail.
This is your only family that counts as a
justified bail, and it's a premeditated prerequisite bail.
The Washington Capitals the Washington Capitals have lost 7 games in a row. They've only scored 9 goals in those 7 games. What is wrong with the Washington Capitals?
Well, Bruce Boudreau swears too much. That's the problem.
We have a deeper insight into what's wrong with them. Or not so much what's wrong with them, just with this losing streak, because that's when the 24/7 basically started.
It's convenient. And do you think the cameras affected it at all? And we're going to talk about 24/7 as well later
on.
Good
question. We can talk about it now, and we talk about it later. We can talk about it later. That was good. I think what happens is I actually think this is going to be a positive for Washington in that, you know, they're losing a lot of games. They've obviously lost self-confidence. I mean, that much is evident. They've only scored 9 goals over 7 games, considering this team is always leading the league in goals. They clearly have, you know, don't have the confidence in themselves. But this is the thing about this team, guys. Since Bruce Boudreau's come in, have they ever really had adversity, long-lasting adversity?
No.
I mean, you lose in the playoffs, you're done, you're sent home, you come back next season, you dominate the regular season again. There's no long-standing adversity. This is the longest losing streak they've had since Bruce Boudreau came on board. And I think what's important to note is he's learning how to deal with it just as much as the players are learning how to deal with it. And what you can tell from 24/7, which again we'll talk about next segment a little bit more, is he's not necessarily sure what the problem is either.
Well, I think the problem starts on their weak defense.
Well, they're
also not scoring. But I mean, you go into New York.
What is it there, right? Because you look at it and you say, you know, they go into New York. One thing I'll tell you throughout the streak, guys, is they haven't scored goals. Usually I would point to, I've had issues with their defense for a while, but I'll tell you one thing. Their problems right now over this streak have been more so lack of goal scoring, as you can tell, as you said before, 9 goals in 7 games. But the biggest thing to me is the goaltending. In that New York Rangers game that you're going to refer to,
Yeah. They
come out and it's, you know, a couple terrible wrist shot goals from the high slot. You can't let it in the National Hockey League. And they don't have confidence right now in Varlamov. They don't have confidence in Neubauer. And these guys are both very talented netminders, but do you have to ride one through a streak?
But when your goalie is struggling, you need your defense to pick them up. And they don't have the defense to pick it up. And that's been the ongoing problem with the Capitals for a number of years now, is they continue to refuse to try and improve their defense.
But the losses, Drew, for example, to Florida.
Yeah.
To the Rangers.
Yeah. The Ducks.
This isn't defense matching up against other teams' top line, save the Ducks there. I mean, the Rangers don't exactly have an unbelievable top line. Same for Florida. So I'm not so sure that's necessarily the case. You have to be able to make some crucial saves.
I think throughout any NHL season, there's always going to be a time when a team has a dry spot offensively.
Absolutely.
But when
everyone goes through dry spots, Drew.
Yes.
Dry periods.
Thanks.
Dry stop. Segments.
That's good. But when your defense can't do anything to help to alleviate the problem or help anything there, then you know, it puts that much more pressure on the offense. If the offense feels that they have to score 4 goals a game, it makes the defense.
That's the way the team's built, Drew.
I think it's built in an inappropriate manner, is what I'm saying.
I think there's
for long term success.
The case for long term success. We're talking about the losing streak, and that's not the only reason for the losing streak.
I'd just like to say something here as Tim gets a little bit more comfortable here in the Sports Radio 1290 studios, Tim. you know what? There's something that's being missed. There's something that we're not talking about here. And Richie is right. I mean, and you're also right about the defense and the goaltending. But I think that this is a team that has almost two personalities. I mean, they're a different team on the road. They were obviously not the same dominant team in the playoffs. But to Richie's point, though, they aren't a team that is relying on their you know, strong defensive prowess. They're a team that's going to beat, you know, score 5 or 6 goals, Drew. The only way Washington is going to beat Philadelphia or Pittsburgh in the playoffs is by scoring 5 goals every
night. You don't
score
5 goals in the playoffs. You just don't.
Well,
they're not going to do it.
I mean, acquiring Robin Regier, there's nobody out there. There's not one defenseman change. There isn't a Chris Pronger coming to Washington that's going to totally change
the
dynamic.
They're not built for playoff success. That's what I'm saying.
But as far as their losing streak goes,
we've been saying that for a while.
I
know
that's part of it. They're not. They don't play.
Who cares if you win in the regular season if you're not going to be able, if you're not built to win in the playoffs? And I think they're short-sighted. You have to change the makeup of that team in some manner so that you are able to play in the playoffs.
Let me ask you this: How do you propose doing that?
Well, that's the problem. They've committed. I mean, maybe you don't re-sign Alex Semin, and the money that you would spend on Semin, you put on for a couple solid defensemen.
You would give away a 40-goal scorer for a couple, two or three, you know, number
What's
three
the difference defenseman? If he scores 40 goals in the regular season and you lose in the first or second round of the playoffs every year?
Well, you're saying that I'm not necessarily thinking, I know Salmon hasn't been good in the playoffs, so maybe that example is a good one for you there. But I'm not saying necessarily that's, you know, that would be a good decision for them. Look at their defense, Drew. They added Scott Hanlon to be a defensive stalwart. He's clearly lost about half a step, maybe more, since his days in San Jose.
Yeah.
Okay? But in reality, the way the team is constructed right now, there's a very good chance to win the Eastern Conference. I mean, they weren't my pick. They aren't going to be my pick. I'm not going to change my pick. My pick's Pittsburgh, and it was at the beginning of the season. But this is a team that is better on paper than they were at the beginning of the season. So I don't think this is – I'm not overreacting to the streak. I think they're going to get out of it. The percentages are going to go back in their way. They're going to get some confidence, and I think this is going to serve them well moving forward. Whether they have what it takes to be the Stanley Cup team is a whole different question, and that can be argued both ways. But, I mean, I agree with you, and you know that I've said that for a while. This team doesn't necessarily have what it takes to make it to the next level. The issue with their defense, quickly, guys, we'll go to the next topic quickly, but you look at their defense, and you add Hanlon, but I think Schultz is overrated. So yeah. Green has improved defensively, but not great. Carlson, not great defensively. You know, talented player.
Well, he's 19 years old. I mean, no, he's still...
I'm just talking about now.
Yeah.
Alsner,
he's young.
Not bad, okay? Schultz, solid but overrated, in my opinion. Hanlon, pretty solid. Not unbelievable, but pretty solid. And Matthew mentioned this a couple weeks ago. Again, when it comes down to it, and this is to your point about the defense, in a series and against a really good team, which of those defensemen combo are you going to put up against Crosby or Richards line?
Nobody. They're going to lick their lips and be excited to play against them because they're going to be able to dominate.
But if you can outscore them,
yeah. But I don't think you can in the playoffs. That's the difference. Let's move to Phoenix, or Glendale, Arizona. With apologies to the residents of Phoenix, because I'm sure they don't want to have anything to do with that clown college they have going on there.
Yeah.
The city of Glendale approved the most ridiculous lease in the history of leases. I sat there and watched the Glendale City Council meeting on Tuesday night. I actually feel as though I've lost 4.5 hours of my life and I'm never going to get them back.
And that wasn't predictable.
You spent 4.5 hours in that chat room?
And watching and chatting and promoting this show. As I do it for you.
But 4.5 hours?
It started at 8 o'clock. It went until 12:30 is when I bailed out after they finished the voting on it. It was the most absurd.
But you knew they were going to vote it through.
I know. It was just I wanted to see it in action. It was actually
4-2 vote, right?
I'm sorry?
4-2 vote?
5-2.
Well, 5-2 when you include the mayor, but she only really officially votes.
What did Little Timmy say this time?
No, Little Timmy's name is actually Logan, and he did not give as eloquent a speech as he did last time.
Again?
Yeah, the 6-year-old. He's being used as a pawn by his parents. It's quite attractive to watch.
He was there again.
Yeah, the 6-year-old. The mayor is the biggest joke of them all. I mean, she should actually go. I'm being serious. She's stealing money at this point in time, is what she's recommending.
You're the big political aficionado here, so.
Well, I mean, she's stealing money from taxpayers of Glendale. There were a couple of taxpayers against the plan who came up to speak, and while they had their points were very valid, she would cut them off and wouldn't let them speak. And the problem was they weren't sort of polished and eloquent. They sort of looked like, well, they just looked a little bit rough around the edges, as the saying goes. So I think they weren't given as much credibility as they should have. Although each and every one of their points was spot on and perfectly. The city of Glendale proved beyond a shadow of doubt that they're just a joke right now.
Yeah, they're a joke.
Andrew, if I could just interject for 1 second.
Did you just call me Andrew?
That's your name.
Nobody has ever called me Andrew.
Professor,
but that is your name,
you
Drew.
That is
Andrew.
My name, yes, but it's hardly the... Anyways, go on.
You can call me by my real name, Ezekiel, if you want. Okay, anyways. Or anyway, because some people don't think anyways is a word. Listen, I think it's great that Phoenix is going to keep... the Phoenix Coyotes are going to stay in Phoenix. I honestly say this. Don't get me wrong. I'm a champion of the return of NHL to this city. It's good for Phoenix, but this deal... You know what this deal seems like? Remember the episode of The Simpsons where... I forget the guy's name, but he brings the monorail to Springfield.
Yeah.
And he says, I brought monorails to North Ogdenville.
And I put them
North
on the map, and he writes
put
it on the
map.
Map. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It seems like Matthew Holsizer is the monorail guy. Or actually, maybe that would be...
The city of Glendale would be the monorail guy.
The city of Glendale would be the monorail guy.
And
Jobbing.com Arena would be the monorail.
Yeah, that would work. That's
well,
a fair...
Well done.
That's
well
done. Well done, Ezekiel.
It's great that... Honestly, though, I mean, it's great that the Coyotes are going to stay in Phoenix, but as far as the deal goes... It's absolutely terrible for the middle class or lower class taxpayer who's going to be paying
it's
now more money not only for the lease on the arena, but for a guy to manage that lease on the arena.
It's the most absurd deal in the history of sports leases. It's actually astoundingly bad, but that's okay. Good luck to the city of Glendale. They'll be bankrupt within 5 years. Let's go to break. When we come back, some more news and notes from around the NHL. It's been a busy week. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're going to continue now with news and notes.
NHL news and notes.
You know, let's go back to the New York Rangers, where they lost one of the key components of their team this week for about 6 weeks. Ryan Callahan broke his left hand blocking a shot on Wednesday versus the Penguins. What does this injury mean for the pair, for the Rangers, and their you know, in the next 6 weeks, how are they going to get through this injury?
You know, he's one of the He's become a solid goal scorer, Drew. He's one of the most underrated players in the National Hockey League. He hits, he blocks shots, as you can tell by the injury. He's a leader in that room. He can put pucks on the net. He has good speed. He has good intelligence. Really, really, really solid player, guys. He's really one of those, you know, they brought him along very well, and he's really, really, really flourished in John Tortorella's system. That's a big injury for the New York Rangers, no doubt about that.
That's a lot of reallys. Really.
A lot of reallys?
Yeah, it was a lot of reallys.
Yeah, I like his game.
I know. You really, really, really do.
I also really like his game. We've talked about the Rangers. Some of the players the Rangers have, it's impossible for me not to like them. Brandon Dubinsky's fighting. Ryan Callahan, a guy from New York. You know, I've got his bio in my hand as we speak.
You have his whole world in your hand?
You did nail it on the head again. A hometown guy, and he's not getting the credit, maybe because he's not putting up, you know, eye-popping numbers, but he really does do it all. And the Rangers here, they've got a game tonight coming up. Who are they playing here? Who are the Rangers playing
tonight? Flyers tonight. It's an early Rangers game. It starts at 1
Flyers,
o'clock tonight.
Flyers tonight, and then they've got a five-day break. They've got the Lightning, so two tough games coming up. But then they've got the Islanders and Devils. You know, and then they play the Lightning again.
The Islanders and Devils, so they get two buys. Yeah, they get two buys. It's a free space on the bingo card now.
I don't think the Rangers are necessarily going to go into a bit of a spin in the next 10 games or so, but he's a guy that's almost become the MVP of the team. Obviously, Lundqvist is the MVP of the team overall.
But he's the MVP on the ice. Him and Dubinsky. I'm with that. Lundqvist hasn't been consistent enough this year. And by the way, I think John Tortorella should be right now, if we had to rule today. You know, if we had to decide today, John Tortorella should be one of the candidates for Coach of the Year.
And we're going to sort of break down, and statistically speaking, coming up next segment,
we have to get Tortorella on the show sometime. I mean, Torts is, it has to be the most candid guy out there. There's no talking points for that guy. I mean, I remember, I'm a big fan of Torts. I'm a Devils fan, and I'm giving all this praise to the Rangers, Drew. This is a big...
Well, your season's over.
It's a big step for me.
Next topic.
Yeah, exactly. Was this a bold prediction you made a couple weeks ago?
Lukewarm.
No, the prediction was...
It was lukewarm.
Yeah. If he was fired.
Okay, so the word if was in there, so you're
absolutely
okay?
Absolutely.
Okay, just making sure. It has to do with Randy Carlyle. He got a one-year contract extension from
the
Anaheim Ducks.
I like him as a coach. He's a great coach.
I think what this says is clearly... I think what Brian Murray is saying here...
Bob Murray.
What he's saying here.
Bill Murray was an actor in the movie Groundhog Day, Drew. Also, he was in, what was that movie with Scarlett Johansson? Lost in Translation.
Yeah, that's right.
Nice reference.
Which is
Caddyshack. He was in Bill Murray is, just IMDb it. Bill Murray was an actor. Good actor, too.
Bob Murray, this is what this is Bob Murray saying to Randy Carlyle, look, we have a year of transition here. We know we've saddled you with a poor defense. So we're giving you have next year where things are going to get better to prove your worth again.
Not only is he making the statement to Randy Carlyle, he's making the statement to the team, hey, no scapegoats here. Randy's here for at least the next year. You better get your game going. And I mean, they have played a lot better since the first half of the season, and first part of the season, excuse me. They had their lulls, which happens when you have a lack of defense and you've had some injuries. But, you know, I mean, Koivu and Slaney have been day-to-day with injuries. Lupo's back now. You have some secondary scoring. You have a great goaltender. If your defense can hold up, they know that Randy Carlyle is going to be there. I think that really helps them moving forward.
And, Richie, you know, regardless of the comments that you made, and obviously Brian Burke would love to have Randy Carlyle.
I think Ron Wilson,
I'm going to go on a bit of a rant here. I think Ron Wilson's a little bit overrated as a coach,
and I think
Randy Carlyle's a little bit underrated. Camp Fowler has stepped into that team, and he's excelled under Randy Carlyle.
Yep.
Randy Carlyle... it brought Anaheim its only Stanley Cup. Randy Carlyle was a great defenseman, and his style of coaching is, you know, he's not the most vocal. He's not one of those players. Well, I mean, vocal in the sense that, you know,
he could certainly bring along a youngster, as he look at all the team and players he's coached through.
And you know, he's done a very good job. And the
It says something about a coach when you're successful in every stop you've had.
Yeah,
and he's been successful in every single stop he's had. So
yeah, he was great with the Moose, and that's why he couldn't stay here that long because he was meant to be in the NHL.
Washington Capitals, Pittsburgh Penguins 24/7 debuted this past week. Your thoughts on the first episode, Richie? You off air, you called it must-see TV.
Must-see TV. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. It was great. You get behind the scenes, get to know the players, you get to see how the coaches, really get to see how the coaches work with their team. The travel aspects. You know what? The one thing you realize when you watch this is hockey is similar at the professional level. It's so similar, you know, from just the youth level to the professional level. The teams, the way they interact, the players interact, the way the coaches try and coach. I mean, a team is a team. It's funny to say that, but, you know, I was saying to a friend of ours yesterday, I said, you watched Bruce Boudreau coach through a losing streak, and he's trying to say the same things that, you know, coaches are saying out there coaching the youth levels, because you don't know what the problem is. You're trying to fix it. You're trying to push the buttons. And it's interesting how as much as it's different as you move along, it's still the same.
Well, I think we make the game more complicated than it needs to be oftentimes. And, I mean, at its core, when you're trying to snap a losing streak or whatever else, aren't you pretty much just preaching the same things you would preach at any age group?
Yeah, but does it work? And now, of course, Drew, you haven't seen the episode yet, but what happens is it doesn't work everything he tries, and he's tried numerous things. I mean, obviously, their losing streak has been difficult to understand why it's happening. But in terms of the job done by HBO, it's a tremendous job. It's like all the other programs. Must-see TV, though, I highly recommend it. We'll surely be talking about the next few episodes.
Yeah, there's some salty language in there, so, of course, you know, viewer discretion is advised. Salty language, it comes with the territory, and, I mean, that's the beauty of it. It's unfiltered. It's honest. And you don't see that on a day, really, ever.
And because it's on, I think, on Thursdays, will you put it in the show plan for the next few weeks, Drew?
It's penned in there already.
We're out of town next week.
Ezzy, you got to talk about it next week.
We're not going to surely put it out in the schedule. Ezzy's going to have to make that decision.
That's true. It's not up to you and me.
You know, Richie mentioned must-see TV, but it's become must-talk about programming because
we were talking about it in the dressing room last night before hockey.
No, everyone's talking about it, and it's great because HBO, obviously, I most people agree HBO is the leader and in good programming. But go ahead, Drew. If you're gonna give me that, comfortable with you. How am I gonna talk with you going like this?
Well, you gotta finish your thoughts. You gotta have your thought, and then you gotta finish.
It's distracting. Buzz. It's like what you were doing right there is like Sean Avery waving his stick. Like, move on then. I have no point, Drew. I haven't seen it. Move on.
Okay.
We're fighting.
We are. Ezekiel, do you want a hug? Donald Fair was officially hired as the director of the NHLPA early this morning. Finally came down. Has been in the works for. Seems like about a year now.
We talked about this. We talked about this back on Kick.
I think we were talking about it back when we were doing podcasts in Richard's basement.
Well, he's been the executive director, hasn't he? Unofficially, he's been involved with what's been going on.
And we got the press release this morning sent to Legal Curve and amongst other media outlets, and it was confirmed that Donald Fair is going to be the new executive director of the PA. I think the reason it took so long, and they mentioned in the press release, and I saw on TSN last night, I think it was Drager was talking about it. He wanted to make sure that he spoke to at least one member of every team. He was very, 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 adamant about having a say. And I think that's the thing he wants. You know, this is not going to be a long-term thing for him. He's going to come in for a couple of years. He's going to kind of tighten up the ship, make sure everybody's on board, and there's a pending lockout again after next season, not this season, next season. So
certainly contract negotiations will get underway sooner rather than later.
There's really a chance he's going to be able to get rid of the cap.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he'll make some modifications within it. But Donald Fair, I mean, he is a very, very, very capable man. This is a terrific hire by the National Hockey League Players Association. Ezzy, I think you probably agree. You can't go wrong with this one.
All right, and obviously, how many years was he involved with the Major League Baseball Association? About 20 or something like that?
And
from everything I've read and heard and talked about with other people, he's the most popular choice. And you have to think that, you know, abolishing the salary cap is not going to happen. You have to think that one of the major goals of the NHLPA is going to make sure that the salary cap either stays the same or increases, because we know it's going up to just over $62 million next year. And you have to think that the NHL, because of revenues, because of the linking with the TV deal, in the new CBA,
absolutely.
You know, that's going to be a huge goal.
The TV contract will be bigger, and the NHL Players Association will rightfully say, we want a piece of that pie.
Having said that, look at the NBA and the NFL. They might set precedence in such a way that the NHL might have all the bargaining power.
Well, that'll be interesting to see, because both of those leagues will enter into contract negotiations before the NHL actually does. Also, what'll be interesting to see is who Fair hires as a second in command, because apparently he's getting to choose his replacement. So the person he hires as second in command will, in theory, be the new Players Association director after he retires in a couple years.
That might be just as important.
Of course. I mean, we've all seen what happened to Paul Kelly and Ted Sasson, so, you know, if there's mutiny afoot, you never know what'll happen. Yes, the last point before we head to break. Dion Phaneuf returned to Calgary this past week. It wasn't quite LeBron returning to Cleveland. You know, much ado about nothing?
Well, not really, because the only thing the Devils can do right now is move someone out. They're not firing John McClain at this point. If they were going to fire, we talked about this earlier in the show, and we talked about this many times over the last few weeks.
We're talking about Rolston.
We're talking about Dion Phaneuf.
You skipped.
I thought we were talking about Brian Rolston.
You made a jump.
Sorry about that.
You know what? I'm talking about Phaneuf in the sixth thing, so let's talk about Rolston quickly. You mentioned it, Ezzy. I mean, I want to talk about that because it's a guy who was signed for a four-year deal after he was 35. We chastised the deal when we were on air last year around July 1st, but it's a desperation move, really.
Yeah, and for a desperate team who obviously lost again last night after beating Phoenix 3-0, there's not much that you can do. And Rolston is probably one of the worst contracts, even though they thought they'd get someone who still had a few years left. But he got an assist last night, and they're not going to get salary cap relief, Richie. But
two things to note. They put him on waivers, put him back in the lineup, which is fairly commonplace now in the National Hockey League. Second thing...
Well, they wanted to see if somebody would bite on it.
If they do put him on re-entry waivers, there is word around the National Hockey League that a number of teams would have interest in his salary, which would be about $2.5 million per for the next 2 years.
And then the Devils are responsible for half of that salary.
Right. But it gives them a little bit of relief, and the team gets him for $2.5 million.
Team like Calgary, maybe?
Oh, God. The problem is the team like Calgary would be the one to get him. But would you pick up... let me ask you guys quickly. Would you guys pick up Ryan Rolston for $2.5 million?
On Calgary's team, Rolston would be a top six forward on Calgary.
Fortunately, yeah.
I've seen no evidence. Has anybody seen any evidence he has anything left in the tank?
It's hard to tell.
And it's not a one-year deal that they're getting him for.
Yeah.
There is something left in the tank, and I think he's... A lot of players in New Jersey have just gotten into a slump and they can't get out of it.
That's one thing too.
Jamie Langenbrunner. I can't figure out how Jamie Langenbrunner is playing this awful, because he has been consistent 60-point guy for so long.
I know we're up against it, but that I agree with. I mean, every player in the Devils has been terrible, so in reality, maybe Rolston's just amongst
change
the group.
Change of scenery is good for him.
Maybe.
Well, we'll see if they can get rid of it.
2.5, somebody's going to bite, I think.
Let's go to break. When we come back, statistically speaking, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back. Statistically speaking, yes.
Richie's segment.
Here we go.
Okay.
Let's do this.
Statistically speaking, Sidney Crosby's on ice for the second most time amongst forwards in the NHL. 21 minutes and 57 seconds per game. Takes the third longest shift amongst forwards, 58 seconds behind Alexander Ovechkin and Evgeny Malkin. You know, are you burning him out before the playoffs?
You're not, Drew. I mean, if you're not playing him over that much time, you know, 22, you know, if you're playing just over 21 minutes, I think that's a good amount of time for Sidney Crosby. His shifts are a little bit long, but, I mean, good players stay on the ice a little bit longer, and they know their bodies. They stay on the ice also for a little bit longer for power play time. I think that's when it gets kicked up a bit. And interestingly enough, the only forward to be playing more per game than Sidney Crosby so far this year is Corey Perry. Interesting. He plays more PK time. That's one thing. In terms of time on ice, Alexander Ovechkin takes longest shifts in the National Hockey League for a forward. Over a minute, and Evgeny Malkin's actually second. So clearly it's the cream of the crop are taking long shifts. I think the issue...
Is Malkin still the cream of the crop?
Still is, yeah, absolutely. I think what you're looking at here is you're looking at Crosby, you know, being efficient. Not what what Dan Bylsma is doing, Dan Bylsma knows Crosby, knows his body well. I think what he's doing is, remember when Tortorella would play LeCavalier and St. Louis and those guys? Because it's a pretty top-heavy roster, Pittsburgh.
Oh, they'll
play
those guys
25 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. None of that's happening. I think Crosby will be in. He's in great shape, obviously, but he's going to be... He'll be fine for the playoffs once if they play him this amount of time per game.
And that's a fair analogy because you had Vincent LeCavalier,
right.
Marty St. Louis, and Brad Richards during that run of 04, with the Stanley Cup run.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in Pittsburgh, you've got Evgeny Malkin, Sidney Crosby, and Jordan Staal, who hasn't played a game yet this year. And Jordan Staal isn't, in that same echelon, but he goes to those three guys, and he should.
Well, you know,
all three of those guys can handle the ice time.
You know what Jordan Staal is going to be? Jordan Staal is going to be their trade deadline acquisition quite potentially.
Well, that's a good call.
Very true.
You know, and it's almost happened, I think, every year when Gonchar was getting injured.
Yeah.
You know, and he always came back around the trade deadline. Then he took him in for the run for the last 15 or so games, mm-hmm. and then he's fresh for the playoffs. So that's what you're gonna get a fresh Jordan Staal, assuming he can come back this year from his hand injury.
And I think, you know, one the biggest story, arguably, of the first half has been Crosby's point streak.
Crosby's just been unbelievable.
But another story is how well Pittsburgh has played, minus against Philly. Philly owns Pittsburgh right now. They've won 3 of 4 games. But a huge story is that they've done this well without Jordan Staal. And I'm a huge Jordan Staal fan. I know
too.
Richie is too. All the Stahls are amazing hockey players. But they've played very well with a guy that does so much for the team.
So much.
It's unreal. And you're right. When Jordan Staal comes back, I would be a little bit scared the way Pittsburgh has played with Chris Connor and guys like that who aren't exactly,
Jeffries, Letestu, guys
guys who are not. Well, I mean, at this point in time, any team with Sidney Crosby is just, they're just dynamite. Yep. I mean, he's just carrying the team on his shoulders, and it's fantastic to watch.
But they're not overburdening him. That's the most important thing.
David Backes of the St. Louis Blues has the most minor penalties in the NHL with 20, which means that 2 out of every 3 games he's taking a minor penalty.
It's too much, Drew. He's a power forward, but that's too many minor penalties. He's gotten a couple fights this year, but, you know, this is a St. Louis Blues team that's come back to earth a bit. And a team that has a fair amount of injuries. David Backes, first of all, can't be spending that much time in the box.
Because then he's not scoring.
Right. And second of all, I mean, he's not only is he not scoring in that sense, but he's putting his team behind the eight ball. This is a team that's not a high-scoring team. So not only are you not scoring when you're in the box, but you're putting your team on the PK. And special teams are so important these days. David Backes has to become more disciplined.
Yeah.
And if he wants to become, the leader of the team, as Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch alluded to last week, and wants to eventually become the captain, he needs to cut down on these stupid penalties.
Is it just youthful exuberance?
Maybe, but he's been in the league for a few years now. It's enough of that. He needs to cut back.
On the flip side of that, of taking the most minor penalties, is Patrick Kaleta of the Buffalo Sabres, who's fourth in the NHL in drawing opposing players into a penalty. Last year, he was first.
Per 60 minutes. Yes, he's fourth right now in the league last year. As you just said, he was in first. Drew, Patrick Kaleta...
Is that just because he's the most annoying player in the NHL?
Very well, maybe, Drew, but think about it from that sense. He comes on the ice, he draws penalties. How valuable is that to the team?
Yeah.
It's hugely valuable.
That's
the problem is he plays the game
more.
A little bit. You know what? I mean, my problem with him is I think he plays the game a little bit on the dirty side.
Sure, but let's think about it this way, Drew. He draws, let's say, for example, 8 penalties, okay, over the course of a few games. 8 penalties. He puts his team scores on 25%. It's a little high, but 25% of their power play chances. There you go. 2 goals.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's valuable what he's doing.
How important
it's certainly, I mean, last night he caused a bit of a melee in the Florida-Buffalo game with some of his actions. But
I don't like him. I know he plays like a rat, like Ken Linsman. I know that. Like Sam, the Averys, all those guys. But
is he the rat 2.0?
Yeah, maybe. But the truth is...
Is he dirty?
Yeah, he's dirty.
Well, that's where I gotta draw the line. You can play like a rat without being dirty, but I mean, when you can call him out for being dirty, like we're just doing.
He could back it up though. He'll chuck the knuckles.
He will chuck the knuckles. And Darcy Regier Darcy Regier seems to know his value. He's kept him there. He's had him to a pretty valuable contract. I think he's at like 1.2 a year.
Yeah.
I'll check on that right now. I think he's at 1.2 a year. He's just a very, very, very underrated player. And what he brings to the team might not be in the mainstream stats, stats realm. This year,
that's why we have statistics.
Kaleta is the cat numbers is 900,000, so he's not even at 1.2.
And the thing is, Richie, his value to the team is similar to a guy like Matt Cook's got a little bit more offensive skill. I'll take these guys. Matt Cook is not the most liked guy on the ice in the NHL. But for the Pittsburgh Penguins, he's extremely valuable because he sticks up for Sidney Crosby.
And he concusses opposing teams' players on a regular basis.
There was a funny line. They were skating in the 24/7, and one of the kids came up to, I think, Maxim Talbot and slashed him or speared him as a joke. And he's like, "Well, why is this kid slashing or spearing?" And he said, and he looked down and he said, "Oh, it's Matt Cook's son." So, like father, like son.
Love Talbot, too.
Yeah, he's very funny.
Two goals in Game 6 against the Wings.
Game 7 against the Wings.
Yeah,
that's right.
Great player.
To some extent, I also think that motivates Sidney Crosby because he wasn't on the ice for the last, really two periods of that Game 7.
Yep.
So, I mean, they won it. I mean, certainly they didn't win it without him, but, he wants to be on the ice carrying the cup as, hey, I'm the guy who won us Game 7 in the finals. The Atlanta Thrashers have scored first and only 45% of their games. That's last in the NHL. Yet they have 39 points in the standings, one behind Montreal and five behind Pittsburgh, only 8 points out of first in the East.
Really? Yeah.
Is this going to catch up with them, or is this prove that scoring first is a bit of an overrated statistic?
I think it's the former rather than the latter. You need to start scoring first, Drew. If they continue to get down behind the eight ball, they're not going to be able to come back in all these games. It's amazing that they've been able to do that so far. That's an amazing stat. But at some point, you need to start getting on the board first, especially with the goaltending you have. You can clamp it down, and you have a very good, solid defense. But the fact that they've come from behind so far, guys, has been a credit to the team and the will there. But you can't sustain that.
Atlanta has the...
That's the point of it.
Right now, Chris Livermore of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution was talking about this a little bit on his blog. Right now, their power play is ranked sixth, but up until, I think, a week ago or 2 weeks ago, Atlanta had the best power play in the NHL. Yeah. They've got more goals than any other team in their division, and that's including the Capitals and Lightning. I mean, they're scoring a lot of goals, but they're doing it in kind of a weird way. By falling behind, and then they're scoring a lot of goals in bunches.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, the Thrashers, I think they're good enough to get into the playoffs, but they worry me. They're one team that I think I wouldn't be surprised if they slipped out, because and let's be honest, Pavlich is a guy that can stop 40 shots a game.
That's a team that needs a playoff run to have. I mean.
They've never won a playoff game, Drew.
I know. That's what I'm saying. And, I mean, Bill Daly reiterated the comments that he made on this program. He reiterated those comments to the Associated Press yesterday, pretty much saying this team, the fans need to step up. This team needs local investors. Otherwise, they're going to be a target for, relocation. We already knew that. He said it on this program.
They need to step up because Thrash is in jail right now.
Well, we'll get to Thrash in jail later on in the show.
Atlanta is eighth in the NHL in goals per game.
Free Thrash.
3.06.
Well, Thrash. 5,000 tickets until Thrash gets freed, but we'll talk about that later on. The New York Rangers lead the NHL in hits with 988. Wow. Testament to them buying in and playing John Tortorella's style of hockey.
Him coaching to the team and the team playing towards his style, exactly. He plays an extremely aggressive style, too, on the forecheck. Even, they'll throw guys, defense are pinching all the time, defense are cutting off the corners in terms of the puck comes around the boards, the defense pinch, and the forwards back them up. They're very, very aggressive. Where many teams back up, his teams move north, south, and they're taking on his attitude. Guys like Ryan Callahan obviously play a factor in that, but and obviously they've added guys like Bugard. But this is a team that is as physical as you're going to get. Brandon Dubinsky's been taking on the other team's best players. He fought Ovechkin the other day. He was going at Crosby. This is the Rangers aren't an easy game anymore, and they were an easy game for a long time. And the hits don't necessarily translate to standing success, but they make you more difficult to play against. Nobody ever, you guys know, when you guys play hockey, nobody ever wanted to play against the most physical teams. I mean, you get worn down.
Yeah, I quit hockey before contact was allowed.
Oh, okay.
Richie, we talk a lot about team identity and its importance in the NHL, and Tortorella's been there, is this his third season now, second season? Third season,
third,
I guess.
I believe, if not, yeah.
This team has an identity now. They didn't.
That's right.
And he's getting the most out of his players. He's getting, Erik Christensen playing his best hockey. A lot of guys on this team now are having career years. And it's about time, because the Rangers are a team that you don't want to play in the playoffs. I think the Capitals want to play the Rangers in the first round of the playoffs.
They got a goalie who can steal any game, any time of the day.
Good young defense.
And a young team on the upswing. This isn't the old Rangers of veterans who are making
article in the Globe this week by Roy McGregor talking about the New York Rangers and Glenn Sather's tenure there. And we tried to actually get Roy on this week, but he has some
January is coming
family commitment, so we're hoping to get him on in January. But it was a really good article. I encourage you to go read it. Also, the last stat.
The Rangers also lead the NHL in blocked shots with 559.
And again, we talked about it last week in terms of, sometimes blocked shots aren't great because that means you don't have the puck. That being said, it's still a skill, and Dan Girardi leads the National Hockey League in block shots. The Rangers as a whole on defense are very good at blocking shots, and their forwards are willing to put their body down to block shots. So this
which
is
we
team.
Saw with Callahan getting injured, so there is some good and bad with it, which is unfortunate.
That's right.
Let's leave it there for this, and we'll go to break. But we should remind you, next week, even though it's Christmas Day,
We're going to be on the air here Saturday morning. Ezra will be the host of the show. He'll be joined in studio by Michael Remus, a former contributor to IllegalCurve.com. We'll be coming in from Michigan to join us. Dave Manuk, Richard and I will be away, but you know, Christmas Day, turn on. You're sitting around the family, around the Christmas tree. Turn on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I'll be listening online.
That's right. You'll be listening in there. You'll be in Vegas. I'll be in Kentucky.
I might call in.
You're going to be calling in, really?
Aren't you going to be in rehab though?
They tried to make him go to rehab. He said, no, no, no. When we come back, James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg. All sports.
Spain are the world champions at last.
All the time. Insight, analysis, and opinions on all things hockey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290.
Remus coming in, dropping off some water for us. Make sure we got our vocal cords nice and moist. That's nice of you, Remus.
Cold water, too.
Cold water?
That's fancy water.
Cold water?
That's fancy fridge water.
Are you talking about Phoenix again?
How are we talking about Phoenix?
Cold water?
Cold water. Very nice.
Are you talking about Bill Goldberg?
We're not talking about wrestling. Anyways, we're trying to get James Gordon on the line, so we'll hopefully be joined by James in a couple minutes. You know, the Senators, I mean, we're going to talk to James, of course, about it, but they overachieved last year.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But, I mean, I still don't think expectations were too high for them. I think the fans knew that they were overachieving.
Fans haven't bought in, literally. They haven't bought a lot of tickets, and, you know, they don't think the team is worth seeing right now. And
yeah.
There certainly is a lack of direction there. I don't know which way this team's going. Is it going forward? It seems like it's kind of taking baby step or two forward and then backwards. One of the biggest things I've noticed about the Senators, guys, is when's the last time they really put, you know, Erik Karlsson is an exception, and he's probably been the most impact player they've put through the system, but Nick Foligno didn't turn out. At least, hasn't been as good as they anticipated. Guys like Winchester and Brian Lee,
they put Brian Lee on waivers.
I realize, Drew, and if they had seen Brian Lee play at UND, I mean, they should have known he wasn't worth that pick in the begin with. But the thing is, they used to have a pipeline of young players. As they would put the Hadlats and the Hosas and
yep.
They trade for Chara, but like they draft Red and they have a bunch of these guys.
Well, you know why. Because they were drafting first overall every year.
I realize, Drew, but even so, even they were drafting a little bit lower, they were able to get these guys. And now, because I believe Hosa was the middle of the first round pick.
Hosa wasn't a top three or five pick.
And he tore his ACL right after they drafted him. And now, guys, or is it before? Whatever it was. Now this is a team that doesn't really have any youngsters to come in and take the reins. And so this is an old team.
And it certainly is an old team.
Well, the important players are old. Spezza's not old, but he's getting a little bit older. Alfredsson and Gonchar, guys like that, are old.
Yeah, Hossa was drafted 12th overall in 97.
Right. So middle of the first round. I mean, obviously it's a high pick, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's a high pick, but it's you're right. You're absolutely right. They haven't developed any young, talented players in a lot of years.
Let's be honest, though, guys. They have 79 goals scored, which is awful. In the Eastern Conference, but let's go back to one of the main reasons why they're not doing very well right now. The Danny Heatley trade was a complete disaster. Jonathan Chichu's not in the NHL anymore. Milan Mihalik has not
bad knees.
Milan Mihalik has had knee injuries and he has not given them what they needed. They have not replaced Danny Heatley's offensive production. And in the Eastern Conference, I mean, Spezza, his numbers aren't bad. Daniel Alfredsson, at 38 years old, he's not exactly putting up bad numbers. But who else is stepping up? That trade was supposed to bring back two guys that were going to at least equal Heatley's production. But the Nick Foligno's and those guys haven't. I mean, Kovalev. What does he have? 15 points, 16 points.
Oh, yeah,
They don't have enough. They don't have enough guys scoring, period. And that trade, I mean, it just looks bad. That trade.
I mean, Heatley set back that organization. I mean,
exactly.
I mean, it's a shame what Heatley did to them, and they had no chance. I mean,
The first 2 years after the lockout, Heatley put up back-to-back 100-point season.
I know.
Barring any unsurprised things, people are expecting Heatley to finish his career as a center. There's no reason to think
it's not.
I mean,
but you're absolutely right, Ezzy. You're absolutely right that Heathie set back that organ. I mean, he's really proven to be, in the modern era, one of the more selfish players in the NHL.
Smead, Cogliano, and Penner would be a different story.
Yeah, Smead, I'll take that package over a guy with bum knees and a guy and a guy who couldn't score anymore in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what they got back, so no wonder there's trouble. We're still trying to get James Gordon on the line, so in the meantime, why don't we move to On the Beat so we can talk about some of the articles that... that caught our eye in the NHL this past week.
There's some really interesting ones here. Ezzy really did a good job on this.
Yeah, kudos to Ezzy for picking out these guys. Let's start in Toronto, where Paul Hunter of the Toronto Star writes about Frederik Sjostrom,
Sjostrom. It's funny, I was talking to Richie about that. I think it's pronounced Sjostrom. It's a tough name with the S and J. Anyways, continue.
Yeah, and the O. Yep. The O is what really throws me off.
Yep.
But he paved a new path for elite Swedish hockey players in that he came to play in the Canadian Hockey League, which was something very rare. He came at 17. He'd already played a year in the Swedish Elite League, but wasn't happy with his development there. And so he decided to come play junior, whereas most of the players that the foreign players that were playing in Canadian junior at the time were either Czech or Slovak.
Mm-hmm.
So Sjostrom was one of the first Swedish players to come and sort of he's a pioneer for future young Swedish junior talent.
Well, you mentioned Czech and Slovak junior players. Pavel Brendl played for the Hitmen, I believe, in 98 or 99.
Yeah, that was the bust of a pick in 98 for the Rangers.
Yep. Yeah. This is a good article. Paul Hunter, we had on the Legal Curve back when we were on Kick. And it's a good little article because Sjostrom was part of the Phaneuf trade and, going from Calgary to Toronto with Phaneuf and Keith Ollie. And he played with Phoenix and the Rangers, I believe, four or five teams now.
He was with Don Maloney, brought him from the Rangers. Yeah. To the Phoenix.
And he hasn't cut on. But this is a good article because we were actually, me and Richie, when we were reading this article, not together, but just talking about it. He played with
lying in bed together. You guys were reading this article.
He played with Getzlaff for the Hitmen, and Sjostrom has been one of those players that he's found a nice little role on Toronto. But
one of the first to come over, and there's now between 5 and 10 players from Swedish descent
playing in the junior. One of the top picks of this upcoming draft is a Swedish defenseman, I believe, playing in Kitchener or Oshawa, who's done the same thing.
Okay.
So, yes, you're exactly right.
It's a good little read. He talks about how kind of it was a little bit weird for him to come to Canada from Sweden, but he wanted to develop early.
Yeah, he said his development wasn't coming the way he expected in the Swedish Elite League, so he thought he'd try the Canadian juniors, and it worked out
overall,
for him.
But yeah.
Yeah. Next article comes to us from NHL Fanhouse, AOL Fanhouse, America Online Fanhouse, from Christopher Botta. Mm-hmm. Better known as Chris Botta, better known as the guy the Islanders decided was responsible for all the team's failures, so they banned him from the arena.
If you don't follow Chris Botta on Twitter, you should, and you should read his articles because he's a very talented guy and writer. And this article is great.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you.
And that's why we're talking about it. It's about Zenon Konopka, who's sort of a fourth line player fourth line center for the Islanders.
Yeah.
And talks about sort of the motivation that Konopka gets on a daily basis comes from his father, who unfortunately has passed away, and his family about his father, who was taken prisoner during World War II from German and Russian soldiers when they invaded Poland. Then he went and he fought the Nazis. His family went and fought the Nazis while his family was given a safe house in Africa. Mm-hmm. So, tells the story of a guy and where he gets his motivation to play each and every shift in the NHL. Tell you what, and to play for the Islanders on a regular basis, you need to find all the inspiration you can ever get.
Yeah.
I mean, but, thank you. But, an interesting article. These are, what we're trying and doing in On the Beat is sort of find articles. More. We want more than just the game articles. We want profiles of players, things that jump out at you that are, sort of timeless and, interesting stories about players and where they find their motivation on a daily basis to, get up every day. Another article coming out of the Globe and Mail, and this one was exclusive to the Globe and Mail. Let me just load it up over here.
So the Corey Fulton.
This is the Alan Mackey column. Yeah. Everybody remembers back a couple years ago in a junior hockey game in Ontario when Don Sanderson was involved in a fight. He was involved in a fight with a guy named Corey Fulton.
Mm-hmm.
And in the course of the fight, Sanderson ended up falling. His helmet had come off in the fight, hit his head on the ice. Eventually he lapsed into a coma and actually passed away 20 days after the fact.
Terrible.
A terrible tragedy. I mean, absolutely a freak incident on the ice and a terrible tragedy. And this story is about Corey Fulton sort of coming back from that, the depression that followed for him and involved in that, and trying to find his love for hockey again.
And it's very difficult.
Very difficult. I mean, this is a guy, not that I ever
fight in hockey, but we see fights all the time, and they end usually fairly innocuously, mm-hmm. or, you know. But this was a, you know, it obviously caused a ripple effect throughout the hockey world. Everybody That's remembers, the ramification, should a fight be stopped? In fact, they changed the rule now.
Yep.
As soon as a helmet comes off during a fight, the fight is immediately stopped.
Yep.
But, it talks about Corey Dunlop's personal battle against the
Corey Fulton's
personal battle against the... the demons that followed him, as a result of this freak incident. And, it's good to see that he sort of found his love for hockey again.
Yeah, Drew, you got to read this article.
And, of course, go to illegalcurve.com. All these articles are listed there so you can find them.
Especially if you're a young hockey player or you're a hockey player who fights or likes to fight. Because, just so the viewers know, if you're not going to end up reading this article or if you do, Corey Fulton's now playing pro hockey in Danbury, Connecticut. In a minor pro league called the Federal Hockey League. And in this article, he's quoted as talking about how he's changed the way he fights and how the family of Don Sanderson has accepted his apology, mm-hmm. and he has a relationship with him. And it's really interesting to see how fighting has evolved, in the last couple of years because of this. And he had depression and problems. It doesn't really go into that, but he said he was having problems talking to people.
Yeah, well, he was in a dark place.
And, you got to read this. You just have to.
The final article we're going to talk about, and this is when really gets my blood boiling.
Ridiculous.
A midget coach in Peterborough, Ontario, was coaching his team. He was, one of the players on his team was called the N-word, and I'm obviously not going to say it on air, but everybody knows what the N-word is.
True.
It's one of the worst words in the English language. His player was called the N-word. The player who, the person who said it was given a minor penalty,
mm-hmm.
Benched for a couple shifts, and then put back on the ice to start the third period. The Peterborough head coach was, upset about this obviously, non-existent punishment, pulled his team off the ice,
sure.
and said, we're not going to play against a player who feels this language is appropriate. We're not going to play in a game where the refs won't punish us. We won't play against a team where the coach thinks that, this is appropriate for the player to still be playing. For some bizarre reason that the Ontario Minor Hockey Association will have to explain, at some point in time, they've suspended the head coach for pulling his team off the ice. Then they extended the suspension based on some ludicrous rule that talks about your team having to play the game if they're, something along those lines. You guys both coach hockey.
It's actually happened 2 years ago when I coached, and there was somebody said something to a player on our team that was not the N-word, but...
it was a racial comment of some sort.
Yeah, a racial comment, and actually the coach, and then we informed the coach on the other team, and he, I think, benched his own player for, I think, six games. So, I mean...
Damn right.
Damn right is exactly the case, and it's ridiculous. This is just absurd. Minor hockey is a fair amount of issues, and that certainly exhibits some of them there. I mean, that's just... I can't even give it any more
Richie,
time.
What's disturbing about this is that there's, what's happening to this child and the coach of that team? That's what is the story here. I mean, there's absolutely no...
That's right.
In this day and age, Canada is a multicultural country, and there's no room for this. This whole notion that he didn't send his players out because of a rule and that they're going to continue suspending him because they think
ridiculous.
He shouldn't be behind the bench of his team is absolutely... This guy did the right thing.
That's right.
The reason why racism isn't allowed in society is because it creates fear. That's why it's not accepted anywhere. It's not accepted in the workplace. It's not accepted in public. Promoting hatred, and it's not tolerated in the NHL.
Here's the comment from the Ontario Minor Hockey Association. They said that the executive director said that we felt that their suspension was appropriate under the circumstances, adding that the coach, Greg Walsh, who pulled his team off the ice, could have dealt with the situation in other ways. I'll tell you what.
How about holding the guy accountable, kid accountable, and the coach accountable who had that set?
Damn right. Suspended from hockey, not allowed to play for the rest of the season.
Right.
Yeah,
that's your punishment.
That's
N-word, you use any racial word on the ice, you're gone. Period. Get it out of the game, and that's the way you do it. The Ontario Minor Hockey Association did an absolute disservice and a disgrace to the sporting community with this decision. They should be ashamed of themselves. End point right there. That's it. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to try and get a hold of James Gordon. We have 6 things we learned this week. Lots still to come here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Legal Curve Hockey Show. 11:18 in the morning, and as it happens, I think 11.18 might have been Remus's blood alcohol content last night. And you can join him over there in the Cover It Live chat at www.illegalcurve.com. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, illegalcurve.com. And of course, remember, Christmas Day, next Saturday morning, we'll be on the air, 10 a.m. sharp, as you'll be here holding down the fort, bringing his own unique spin to the hockey world. Remus, Ezzy, Dave Minuk, it'll be a fun show. Join us while around the Christmas tree, sipping eggnog and singing Christmas carols while listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
That's right.
Yeah. Time for six things we learned this week.
Six things we learned this week.
Richie, starting with you this Saturday morning. Tyler Seguin's development is immensely aided by the fact he is playing in Boston and not in the Canadian market.
Well, Drew, I mean, Tyler Seguin, for most people who don't know, most people probably do know listening to this show, but he was a healthy scratch this week and then got back into the lineup at the end of the week. Healthy scratch, how many people even heard about it? How much was it talked about? How overanalyzed was it? The truth is, playing in Boston behind the likes of, you know, in terms of publicity, in terms of the Celtics with their winning streak right now, the Patriots playing great, you know, the Bruins are playing well. They're on the radar there, and the Red Sox making all these signings, but he can slowly develop. You know, he was a healthy scratch. He didn't have to deal with crazy media, all the articles, all the pressure, and the phone calls. He had a little bit to deal with. He dealt with it. He came back the next night, put up an assist. It's really aiding his development. I think it's going to, you know, obviously the depth of that team also helps, but the lack of, you know, constant scrutinization is not going to hurt. I'll put it that way.
It's almost, you know, it's the opposite of what Taylor Hall is experiencing in Edmonton.
Right.
Is scrutinization a word?
Yeah, I was wondering that. I think it is a word.
I don't know. Somebody look it up in a thesaurus or a dictionary.
Well, Drew, it's more funner to make up words. It's funner, too.
You speak gooder English, Dizzy Weber. Yeah. Ezzy, after watching Ryan Kesler score his first career hat trick against the Blue Jackets on Wednesday night, it is clear that he has quite simply become one of the game's best all-around players.
Yeah, Richie's been singing the praises of Ryan Kesler for a long time, but he's quite simply becoming one of my favorite players to watch. Ryan, you know, his numbers aren't maybe at the same level. I don't know if he's going to equal his numbers. You know, he had a career year last year with 75 points, but he does everything for that team. You watch Ryan Kesler play. He's big. He comes back and back checks, and he takes the puck away from players. They put him out there on the power play. They put him out there on the penalty kill. They put him out on the first power play unit with the Sedins. And there's a lot of talented guys on that team.
That's right.
But he's underrated, actually, for what he's doing. And the deal that he signed back in March, $5 million a year for 6 years, right? $30 million, 6 years. I think he's getting $5 million. I think that's a steal.
I'll look it up right here.
I mean, you talk about some of the other deals that forwards have gotten in the NHL, but at $5 million, Ryan Kesler, you know, it's a steal. It's tough to say a $5 million contract is a
Kesler
steal.
Kesler is
$5 million.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, Henrik Sedin got the captaincy, but as far as I'm concerned, he's the leader of that team.
Yeah, I would have picked him.
He's all over the ice. He really is that all-around player. He's a power forward.
Amen to all you're saying,
Ezzy. That can do everything.
Apparently the reason they didn't select him as captain, I think they thought he was a little bit emotional.
Emotional.
I echo everything that you just said.
Right, and people remember last year in the Olympics, the Ryan Kesler-Roberto Luongo feud, and I love that. I obviously wanted Canada to win, but I loved how he's outspoken. To me, Richie, Ryan Kesler is almost like a Jeremy Roenick, a better version of Jeremy Roenick, who's, you know, in my opinion, a Hall of Famer.
I think everybody in the NHL is a Hall of Famer. It's part of the new policy of the Hall of
Famer. Harold Schneps is a Hall of Famer.
Every NHLer into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, he's great, and he's great for that team.
Pretty sure Tom Fenton's going into the Hall of Fame.
Paul Fenton.
No, Tom.
We've had on this program.
Tom Fenton, the goalie from Phoenix. That's the guy. No, Tom Fenton's the guy the Coyotes signed to play goal for them this week.
Apparently looked really good in the warm-ups.
That's nice. We'll talk about him later
on. Really good with his hair on the sidelines.
The Montreal Canadiens are a much improved team this year, but their success still very much hinges on their opponent on any given night.
It does, Drew. I like the team. They look a lot better. They're controlling the puck. We talked about it last week in terms of their 5-on-5 play. But when it comes to playing against the Pittsburghs, especially Philadelphia, there's certain teams that are just the best in the league. Detroit can play against anybody. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
And, you know, Chicago last year can play against anybody. Philly this year can play against anybody. They can play the skill game. They can play the size game. Pittsburgh, somewhat. I think Pittsburgh falls into that class. Washington doesn't, again, because it depends on matchups for them a little bit more. Montreal especially depends on matchups. You know, there's a possibility that they make the playoffs as a fairly high seed. They get a really good draw, and they go all the way. There's also a possibility they get a bad draw the first round and they lose.
If they end up against Philly or somebody.
Philly, yeah. You know,
I think they can play against Boston.
they could play against Boston. That may not be the best matchup for them, but they could play against Boston.
Yeah.
You know, they do lack some size, and you look at their forwards especially. There's a lack of size up front, and I think that might come back to hurt them. But they're certainly on the right track. They're getting better, and you know, an addition or two at the deadline wouldn't hurt them.
What do you think of Subban's hit?
I liked it.
I thought it was. I thought, you know what I liked most about it? I mean, big hit, devastating hit, changed the flow of the game. Yeah. Clean as clean can be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't go for the guy's head. He stuck his bum out and nailed the guy right in his gut.
Ooh, a bum drop.
Well, it was a bum hit. Ezzie, Nicholas Lidstrom continues to prove his naysayers wrong and say that he is washed up.
Yeah, really. He's 40 years old. He's 40 years old, and he's third in the league in defenseman scoring. We all thought his numbers would drop. I still thought he would get, you know, 40 points. He could easily get 60 points and win his seventh Norris Trophy this year. You know, Wednesday night, by the way, I think there was four hat tricks. And it was Lidstrom's first hat trick, which is shocking.
Crazy, yeah.
And Kessler's first hat trick. I forget who the other two hat tricks were. There were three hat tricks that night. If Remus could maybe check that out and get it to us.
There you go.
But there was four hat tricks on Wednesday night. But, I mean, Lidstrom is still, I think, averaging 23, 24 minutes of ice time. I might be a little bit wrong on that.
Pull
but
that up.
It's at least 21 or 22 minutes. But he's still, I mean, it's still his team. I mean, he's not playing in a reduced role or anything. He's still out there against the top teams, Rich.
I'll tell you this, and people are talking about Dustin Byfuglien for the Norris Trophy, and he's certainly been terrific points wise. But you can't tell me that Dustin Byfuglien deserves the Norris Trophy over Nicholas Lidstrom.
No.
Nicholas Lidstrom is playing 23 minutes and 36 seconds a game, so leading the team in ice time again.
Yeah.
Offensively, he's third on the Red Wings in scoring, 26 points in 31 games, Ezzy.
It's ridiculous.
But to me, the most impressive part is he's able to put up points like that. And Pierre Lebrun talked about in his article this week featuring Lidstrom in his career. He able to put up points like that, but he doesn't get it back on the other side.
Yeah, and Remus reports that there were four hat tricks in the NHL on Wednesday.
Yep. Who were the other two?
I'm not sure.
Aside from Lidstrom and Kessler.
He'll report those. He'll put those into the cover of live chat, and then I can report it back. And apparently, according to Dictionary.com, scrutinization is a word.
Oh,
yet,
nice.
Yet Microsoft Word underlines it as not being a word.
Well, Dictionary.com is what I refer
to. Well, Drew, there's a reason why Richie P. is about to be called to the bar.
Okay.
We'll have to go. But, you know, it's interesting. We'll have to check the official Scrabble dictionary, because we have the Tanner Glass Scrabble question coming up later on.
I think Remus is actually at the bar right now. So
yeah exactly. I was just going to say, me and Remus were called to the bar.
Yeah, I know.
Another bar.
Richie, all the talk about the Dion Phaneuf trade is overblown.
When the trade went down, you could see the merits in it for both teams. Toronto probably sees a little bit more merit in it still, just because of the talent level. But considering the amount he's paid, we talked about it when the trade was consummated. I mean, reality, nothing's really changed. Both organizations haven't really gotten any better. And, you know, Calgary made some stupid decisions by re-signing Stage into the long-term deal. But overall, Phaneuf's name value, again, name carries more value than his play on the ice. And we have to stop analyzing him so much, because he's not that. I mean, he's added nice transition elements to the game, but defensively he hasn't improved at all, and he seems to not really care about the defensive side of the game. And he's a defenseman.
Yeah, that's a big problem. It's a big problem. But, I mean, Keith Ollie, of course, people are waiting to see him develop. They sent him back down to the minors.
Sure.
I may have just mentioned Keith Ollie because it'll allow me to shout out Leah Hextall as well, because she's a big fan of Keith Ollie.
Oh, Drew, subtle.
Thank you. Former Brandon Weeking.
That's right. Ezzy's in here.
Yep.
Yeah. Ezzy, final one. Because Jonathan Quick has clearly earned the number one starting goaltender job in Los Angeles, the Kings should trade Jonathan Bernier.
Yeah, and this is a bit of a bold, it's almost a prediction, or not a prediction, but something that a suggestion or whatever. I'm creating a rumor a little bit. But
you are.
Jonathan Quick is a very good goalie, and his numbers, I think, aside from Tim Thomas, his goals against average is ridiculously low, and his save percentage is high, and he's playing, I think Jonathan Bernier is going to play tonight, if Rich Hammond is correct.
Yes, he is.
So Jonathan Bernier is going to play after sitting out for 24 days.
Yeah.
And as far as I'm concerned, at 22 years old, Jonathan Bernier is finally dominated in Manchester of the AHL last year. And I mean, if you're going to play Quick, move Bernier, because the Kings, they are having a lot of trouble scoring goals, even though their record is pretty good. They're not scoring a lot of goals. Kopitar hasn't had the season that they expected out of him. Dustin Brown's numbers aren't crazy good, but I mean, they could use Sturm's going to come in next week, Richie.
They could use scoring, they put him on the block, he's going to get a lot of bites. As the general manager said when they suggested Price put up was be put on the block. And the rumors were that many GMs would bite. Bernier's an awful talent. I don't know if they could give him away.
Yeah, so, I don't.
You mean he's awfully talented?
Yeah, I'm not saying that. You know, Dean Lombardi is going to try to move him.
It's interesting though.
They should consider it. They should consider it.
One of the two.
Okay, let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to still try and track down James Gordon. We have Rapid Fire still to come. We're going to try and get Cody Eakin on the line.
Yep.
We're working hard to get our guests. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back. That was an interesting song, Tim. What was that? Say that again?
Joe Jackson.
Joe Jackson? Isn't that Michael's dad?
No, it's not Michael's dad.
No, Michael Jackson's dad.
Joe Jackson's
name
a good
is...
old rock guy.
What is Michael Jackson's dad's name? Something Jackson, for sure.
Thanks, Ez.
Thanks for Joe Jackson.
Dad. How do we not know his dad's name?
You sure it wasn't Joe?
It wasn't Joe. Is it Joe?
Reginald?
Really?
It wasn't Reginald.
That's a joke on Reggie Jackson. You didn't get that one, eh?
Was that really a joke, or did you just sort of throw a Reginald there?
I can't call you Andrew. I can't call Reggie Jackson, Mr. October, Reginald.
Okay.
Yeah. Reginald. Michael Jackson's dad is Joe Jackson.
Richie, what does that say?
Yeah, Richie, whatever note you just wrote me is not English.
Let's do lunch.
Is that what that says?
Let's do Lang, Lung, Long. Large?
Richie, what
I'm
does
trying
that
to find out. I'm trying to find out. It doesn't matter. I'm trying to find out Michael Jackson's dad's name.
Wasn't there an NFL player named Michael Jackson, too?
Yeah, there was on Baltimore Ravens. Remember whenever he got touchdowns, Chris Berman would do the little Michael Jackson noise? Anyhow.
Okay.
Drew, can't you moonwalk? You can moonwalk, can't you?
Okay, we're obviously still trying to... We put out an APB for James Gordon, and so far it hasn't successfully worked
out. I'm actually
not
sure if James is in Ottawa or if he's on the road traveling from Colorado to the Senators' next destination, but... What can you do?
Their next destination is in Ottawa. They're going back home.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyways, we're trying to find James Gordon. In the meantime, why don't we just move on to rapid fire? It might not be so rapid. It might be a little bit of a long, drawn-out fire today.
Rapid fire.
Jeremy Roenick.
His name is Joe.
It is Joe? Yeah. Thank you. I told you it was Joe Jackson.
Sorry.
Yeah. Don't doubt me. Why do you guys always doubt me?
You're not that convincing.
Really? I'd like to think I'm quite convincing. Ezzy, you look like you have something you have to say.
I'm really pumped up for rapid fire. Let's do this.
Jeremy Roenick, Sidney Crosby, and Alexander Ovechkin will appear on Monday's episode of The Price is Right, showcasing a prize package that includes a trip to the NHL Winter Classic in Pittsburgh, a behind-the-scenes access at the Winter Classic, and a 2011 Honda CRZ. Zed, I said. British.
Why did you include that?
Because it's part of the package.
O'Toole was making fun of it last night on SportsCenter about how, you win a prize. You get to go to Pittsburgh in January.
As a contestant in the Showcase Showdown, would this be a prize you would bid on, or would you pass it to your opponent?
Oh, that's good.
I'm going to pass this to Richard.
I would for sure take this, obviously. I'm the biggest hockey fan out there. This is a good package.
I think it's a good... I mean...
See, the two best players in the world. I mean, if you're not really into hockey, I don't know if I want to sit outside for 3 hours in Pittsburgh in January.
Oh, you just bundle up. You put a scarf on, some long undies, you're good to go.
You could get a car also. Yeah, maybe you could sit in the car outside the stadium.
That's right, listen on the radio.
Or you could drive the car and just watch from the car.
How much would you bid on it? I mean, we don't know what the person bid or what the value is.
I'd bid a dollar. I wouldn't want to...
No, it's the Showcase Showdown.
Over. I know, but I would assume Ezzy would go over.
On whatever his package is.
Hold on.
I believe Ezzy's package included a catamaran.
What is that?
A boat?
It's a boat. It's a type of boat.
Sorry.
Never heard of it. Richard, I thought you were... Don't they call you Schooner? Isn't that your middle name? Richard Schooner Pollock?
I don't know what that means.
Schooner. It's like a person who sails. His nickname would be Schooner.
Well, you're some kind of boat aficionado now?
I'm an aficionado of all things culture.
I can tell.
Drew's been on a boat in his life.
I can't go for lunch. I have to go to the opera.
So, Drew, I would obviously bid on this, but I think, why don't we bid on this? Because a trip to the NHL Winter Classic, behind-the-scenes access, a 2011 Honda CRZ, which is probably the new CRV or something, right?
It's not an SUV. It's an actual car.
Oh. Okay, what would you bid on this? I would say $40,000.
That's why I bet a dollar.
Now I know why Richie bet a dollar.
That's not over. Lower? Remus is giving me the lower.
I think
the
lower.
CRZ has to be at least $25,000.
How much is the ticket to the
How
game?
How much is the ticket? You think it's $15,000 to go to Pittsburgh in January?
No, but you get a. Do
you work for the Pittsburgh Tourism Council
now? It's airfare. It's behind the scenes, and you have to consider the human value here.
They're not putting any value on the human value.
You get to, chill out with Max
chill
Talbot.
Chill being the operative word sitting out. You don't get behind-the-scenes access into the locker room.
Yeah, well, how do you know? It doesn't say. Well, $40,000 is my final bet.
Richard?
$1.
Bid. $1. I think
Tim, what's the value?
Actual retail value
well, is.
I'll tell you what, Ezzy, you report back next Saturday. Make sure you set your alarm to wake up in time on Monday morning to watch the prices.
Yeah, we'll see.
And you'll see what it says.
Drew, don't forget to have your pet spayed or neutered.
My dog is already neutered. Don't worry, it's taken care of.
Next question.
Okay. Anyways, I think I'm going for about $32,000. I think
Drew Carey, by the way, is doing an awesome job on Price is Right and replacing Bob Barker. Big shoes to fill. Drew Carey's doing a great job there.
Lost a lot of weight also.
Really?
Yeah.
Atkins?
I'm not sure. Jody Shelley of the Philadelphia Flyers was suspended for 2 games after receiving a boarding penalty and a game misconduct for his hit on Adam McQuaid. McQuaid was down on the ice for a bit, but ultimately not too seriously injured. The incident came as both players were racing for a puck during a potential icing call. After the game, Shelley said he lost an edge, hence the hit on McQuaid.
Ugh.
Is it time for the NHL to adopt the hybrid icing rule to eliminate the potential for serious injury in races towards the end boards?
Yes, we've talked about this before, and they should adopt the hybrid icing rule, not the international icing rule, but yes, they should. To avoid
it. Yeah, I actually really like the hybrid icing rule. When we had our website, one of our writers, Kyle Kozier, wrote an article about the hybrid icing rule, which is currently being used in the United States Hockey League, which Kyle was working for at the time, and he had seen it in action many times. You know, basically the hybrid icing rule is it depends on where the player is and if there's a chance of a collision or if there's a chance of a forward getting there before the defenseman and not going to be there, you know, simultaneously. They let it go. It's a really good rule. I like the rule. I always was a fan of the touch icing, but too many injuries, guys, and I basically played my whole life. I never played in the league without the no touch icing, and the truth is it's totally fine. If you could find a middle ground there, I'm happy with it. But if you have to, I don't know. I have no issues with the no touch.
Did you see this? Did you see this play?
I saw it was dirty. 2 games was not enough.
I don't think Shelley meant to do it. I really don't on this case.
I mean, you're trying to read into what he would try to do. What did he do?
Well, I mean, I believe him when he said he lost an edge. I don't think he was trying to run this guy into the boards. I mean, it could have been a lot worse. And I really think the onus for this one falls onto the NHL. I really think that it's time. They're so cavalier and so slow in making some changes that are so obvious sometimes. Just institute this rule. It doesn't take years of study and examination and all the hullabaloo they try and make it out to seem like they're drafting some sort of Treaty of Versailles. Just, you
know. 1918?
Yeah. Ended World War I.
I like that.
Yeah.
Oh, Drew, you like that, eh?
Yeah, nicely done. But, you know, just...
To read Drew's historical blog, log on to www.
Yeah, and exactly. But I think it's just time, you know, institute the rule. You'll save injuries. You'll save the potential for injury here. I mean, this could have been a lot worse if he goes in a little bit, you know.
Right. You absolutely can prevent it with the rule, absolutely.
He could have broken his neck on this play.
The NHL should...
Oh, yeah.
I'm surprised he actually wasn't more seriously injured.
That's what bothers me about this, because if he breaks his neck, if it breaks his neck, then it's a 30-game suspension. It should be a suspension regardless of what happened, regardless of the injury.
But I don't think Shelley really intended to do it here. You're going hard into those boards. I mean, it just seems like they're so cavalier sometimes with player injuries or with the potential to eliminate player injuries. They focus on, typical NHL, they always focus on the less important things, I find. Moving on, Tanner Glass of the Vancouver Canucks is preparing for a Scrabble challenge match against a couple of Canucks bloggers from the site PassItToBoulis.com.
Jan Boulis.
Yeah. What would it be, Jan Boulis?
Yeah. Well, he's playing.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Just making sure. Maybe there's another Boulis.
No,
yeah. Joe Boulis.
Yeah.
What word relevant to the hockey world do you think would garner the most points in the in a Scrabble game? Double and triple word scores, not
Langenbrunner.
Interesting. I wasn't thinking proper names so much because those aren't allowed in Scrabble.
That's true, I guess. But would it be a hockey rules though?
Well, it's something to do. A word, not a proper name, but a word.
Cross checking.
I was thinking.
Well, but that's a hybrid.
Too.
I don't know how that.
No, hyphenated.
A word in the NHL dictionary.
I know, but that's a hyphenated word. Is that one word? Is that two words? You know,
instigating.
Instigating would work. I think instigating would
work.
What
about the word extraneous? In that this question is extraneous to the show.
Next question.
Did I just actually make Drew not want to?
The only
reason why I said extraneous is because X is worth 10, right?
Yeah.
So I just thought of extraneous. But
well,
no, I mean, this article, the reason why...
I included the question is because as he said
I emailed it to you. No,
included in the rapid fire.
Jason Botchford wrote about this on his blog, and Tanner Glass is a big fan of... What's the game on the internet? That word scramble game. But anyways...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I think if you, in a hockey-related question, I think Langenbrenner or maybe Andrychuk or one of those longer
Andrychuk's
dudes.
Andrychuk's good, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clutterbuck.
Yeah, that would be pretty good.
Xenon would be pretty good because the Z is also worth 10.
That's true.
One of our followers on Twitter sent over that he would bid $28,500 for the prize package.
That's a good solid bid.
That's probably a good one. Yeah,
it's a good solid bid.
I think that seems pretty easy because cars are always less expensive in the States. So I think we're overvaluing the cost of a Honda CRZ.
I was up against Andy. That's why I bid $1.
I'm not familiar with that car. I'll have to watch Motoring 2011 when I get home.
That guy
on TSN still have the mustache?
I think so.
It's a great mustache.
Does Crosby still have his mustache, or is it gone?
He shaved after they lost their game last week.
I thought it was a point streak related mustache.
It was a winning streak related mustache.
Okay, that makes sense.
24-7, Drew.
Yeah, I understand. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to do a second half of rapid fire, some cheers and jeers. Maybe we can track down James Gordon. At this point in time, our smoke signals may have reached him. We're not sure. Anyways, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment. It's a good thing we did half a rapid fire last segment because we are now joined on the line by Cody Eakin, playing for the World Junior team, training with the World Junior team in Toronto, getting ready for the playoffs. Cody, are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm here.
Cody, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Cody, how's the team coming together? It's sort of, you know, the World Juniors is always sort of an interesting time in that you bring all these parts together for a very brief training camp, and then the team has to gel together in time for the tournament to begin on Boxing Day. So how's this team coming together this year?
It's coming well. I think, the guys are all hungry, and obviously hungry for the same result. But, here in we're actually in Niagara here. We're doing some team-building stuff. We're heading to Niagara Falls today, and we had a... We spent some time at the Children's Hospital yesterday in Toronto, and, it's things like that bring the guys together.
Cody, what did you learn from being cut from the team last year in your preparation for making the team this year?
Just the compete level. There's no time to take off in the process of the camp, and, I really wanted to come back and prove something here.
Cody, at the end of your season last year you played for Swift Current at WHL, for people who aren't aware. Last year you got into a couple pro games. You played four games for the Hershey Bears of the AHL last year, actually put up a couple goals. There's obviously a learning experience of being cut last year coming into this year, but how much of an experience was it for you to play with pros, guys who are, upwards of 20 years older than you? How much of a learning experience was that?
It's huge for me. It's actually a completely different game than what I was used to, and I was able to pick it up quick and go from there. But like you said, 20 years, up to 20 years older, everyone's obviously stronger and faster. So the biggest thing for me was the system play. I really had to adjust to that.
Cody, it's very common, as people know, when you suit up for Team Canada in the World Junior Tournament, that guys aren't necessarily playing the same roles that they're playing for their junior teams or their pro teams sometimes. Have you talked about, with Coach Dave Cameron about what kind of role you're going to play for this team?
I think Steve's going to be my biggest asset here. So they want me to be, an energetic guy first on pucks and just playing a smart, responsible game on both ends of the ice and working from the defensive zone out.
Cody, a Swedish centerman, Anton Lander, said that the team they view as their toughest opponent is going to be Team USA. Is there any sort of, is the team sort of galvanized around those comments and maybe are going to use them as bulletin board material?
I think once we get closer to the games, probably. Right now, we're really focusing on our own things and not really worrying about anything else. We're practicing hard and working on what we need to do to be a successful team. And, there's no doubt about it that the U.S. is going to have a strong team. But like I said, right now, it's all about us and all about our team.
Cody, every year it seems, Hockey Canada seems to be changing the coaches fairly often for the World Juniors. Dave Cameron's coaching this year. He was an assistant last year. But in terms of the style of play he's wanting to implement, what kind of style? Is he, into an aggressive forecheck? Is he looking for you guys to be a little bit more passive? How is he coaching the team to play?
It's going to be an aggressive team, I think. We really don't have an all-scoring line. It's going to be a real blue-collar team, and everyone's going to be have to get on the forecheck and create energy that way. So, when everyone's doing that and everyone's got the same mentality, I think we're really focusing on all playing the same game, and I think it's going to be good for us.
Cody Eakin, we appreciate the time you gave us here this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We know you guys are busy. Good luck in the World Juniors.
Absolutely.
And enjoy Niagara on the Lake, as you said.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Cody. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And we're going to be doing a comprehensive Drew and I won't be here, but
yeah,
next week.
Ezra will be doing it.
We're doing a comprehensive preview. Yep. We're on Christmas Day next week, 10 to 12. And Ezzy and Dave and Remus are going to be doing at least a half an hour towards the World Juniors, which actually begin the day after on Boxing Day. Canada plays Russia, I believe.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, and we want to thank Cody for coming on. Obviously, he's, you know, they're probably either practicing or just practiced or just came off the ice. And you mentioned they're doing a team building thing in Ontario. Thanks a lot. We appreciate him very much coming on, because he was one of two Manitobans that made the team, the other one being Quinton Howden, and they're busy. They've got an exhibition game coming up against Switzerland on the 23rd. So
what I like about what he said is that the team's going to play an aggressive style and forecheck. Yep. You know, they have a lot of veteran, you know, relatively speaking, defensemen on this team. Eric Gudbrandsson being the best defenseman on the squad. Jared Hall, you know, like you have a lot of good guys, top Ottawa prospect. There's a lot of Calvin DeHaan. You have a lot of good prospects on this team, a lot of veterans, quote-unquote. So I like the idea that they're playing an aggressive style. I never really liked when Canada was... There's a couple of years there between 2000 and 2003 when they were kind of lacking in offensive skill. And remember the Luongo game? When Luongo played here in 1999, I believe.
Well, that team
this tournament got really big.
Yeah.
This tournament got... Winnipeg almost made this a really, really, really significant tournament.
Yeah. A big tournament.
Played a big part in it, exactly.
Yeah.
But that team, if you remember watching that game, Luongo was unbelievable, but they got outshot like 40-10.
That team was, I think, projected to finish sixth or something.
They have high-end skill, and they're also playing an aggressive style, which I like.
I know we got to move on quickly here because we're up against the hour, but I mean, I think it's being a little bit overblown that this team can't score. I mean,
I agree.
You've got Braden Schenn, who put up 100 points in the WHL last year. He almost stuck with the Kings.
Yeah.
You got Sean Couturier, who might go number one overall in the draft, 2011 entry draft. And not to mention the other players on this team that can put the puck in the net.
That's
so I think they'll be fine. I think Canada's going to surprise people and win the gold again.
One issue with it is this. You know, Hopkins from the West, he's supposed to be the Ryan Nugent Hopkins. He's supposed to be the number two overall pick, maybe. Around number, you know, three to, you know.
Top five pick.
My issue is with the Canada always seems to, you know, need to get guys to play roles. I understand that point. But you're telling me, looking back on it, hindsight being 2020, you're telling me last year Tyler Seguin couldn't have been on that team?
No, of course.
And I realize Mike Bellucci, who we've had on this show before, you know, Plymouth Whalers coach, took that upon himself. Elliot Freeman wrote about it, how he told Seguin to pay more attention to defense because that's what they were looking for. And then when he did that, he cost himself an opportunity, you know, offensively, really. I just wonder sometimes if you can't make room for a top five pick. You can't make room for that guy. I mean, that guy's going to come in, and apparently I've seen highlights of him. I haven't seen him play, you know, personally, but I just wonder, you can't find room for a guy with that skill?
I think you do. But kudos to Hockey Canada and the players for going to visit the kids in the children's hospital.
I mean,
smart way to do team building and to also give back to the community. It's well done there. So that's good for them. Worth noting that Remus reminds us that we can only use 7 letters in Scrabble.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can, I mean, if the word extra was on the board, I could add an aeneas.
Wow.
Extraneous. You can build. You can build. See, Remus is giving me
the
thumbs up.
You can do that.
You can build. You can build. That's what we do on the show. We're building a legacy on this show.
The illegal curves.
Episode by episode.
And
Cody Eakin just joined our legacy.
Let's continue on with the rapid fire. Thrasher, the Atlanta Thrasher's mascot, was arrested earlier in the week for stealing a Zamboni and leading police on slow speed chase. Yes, Ezzy felt
slow speed chase.
Ezzy felt the need to email all of us and say, watch this right now.
It was hilarious.
Yes, we're at work.
It was one of the funniest videos I've ever seen. It was great.
Fortunately, this wasn't the case of Thrasher succumbing to the pressure of being the Thrasher's mascot. Rather, it was a publicity stunt.
Yep.
If the Thrasher sell an additional 5,000 tickets throughout the month of December, Thrasher will be let off. Otherwise, it's hard time for the bird. Do you think Thrasher will get away with his criminal act, or is it going to be hard time for this jailbird?
Well, I saw the crowd in Atlanta last night. He might be there for a long time.
Yeah, the word out of Atlanta is there are only 4,950 tickets away from Free and Thrash. But no, if you have a chance, YouTube this. I don't know if it's on YouTube, but you can check it on. It was put together by Thrasher's TV.
I think it was a very good promotional stunt.
Yeah,
it's good. I don't think like you said, Richard, I think Thrash is doing a hard time. But, it's kudos to them at least for trying.
And it's funny. This is pretty, like we said, it's a funny video, but it's pretty unambitious. 5,000, that's nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, they can't sell 5,000, but, I mean, hopefully Thrash gets released.
Yeah, well, they didn't want Thrash doing a really long time in jail.
selling out a game, Thrash might rot in jail. Throw away the key. That's
apparently
the
Philly fanatic has been visiting him in jail.
That's nice. Chris Osgood will be attempting to win his 400th career game on Sunday night at home in Detroit. Is he one of the more underappreciated goaltenders of our generation?
No. He's an average goalie who played on an amazing
team. Deadpan.
He's an average goalie who played on an amazing team. I have a lot of respect for Chris Osgood, but he's nothing to write home about here. Let's not get crazy.
I don't know. I mean, we talked a lot about it, when the Wings were going through their run during the first year of a legal curve, and how he was getting it done, and he didn't have to be excellent. And now Jimmy Howard's the number one goalie, and Chris Osgood probably is going to get, 15 starts
either.
This year. Right. But I don't know. I mean, he's got the win totals, but no, he's not one of the more spectacular goalies in a generation
like baseball,
of Hasek and Brodeur.
Right, it's like baseball.
Not.
If a good pitcher plays on a good team, he's going to get more wins. I mean.
Yeah.
Okay. And the final rapid-fire question is, the Phoenix Coyotes, desperate for a goaltender after Ilya Bryzgalov was declared unavailable with an illness and with not enough time to summon a replacement from their AHL team in San Antonio, signed former NCAA Division III goaltender Tom Fenton to back up Jason LaBarbera when the Coyotes played the Rangers in New York. Had this game been played in Phoenix instead of New York, do you think the Coyotes would have been able to find any goaltender with legitimate hockey experience to back up LaBarbera?
Steve Nash.
The answer.
I thought he was a soccer goaltender.
Oh, well, you know,
both Steve Nash.
That's a little bit bigger in soccer.
You know, both Steve Nash's brother is a pro soccer player.
Martin Nash.
And his sister is also a college soccer player. Just a side note.
And his dad is Graham Nash. No, I'm kidding.
What about Graham Nash?
What about Knowlton Nash?
Young.
Oh,
the former CBC guy, Knowlton Nash. Anyways,
I like Knowlton Nash.
It was part of the Treaty of Versailles.
Yeah, Dan. Drew, the answer is yes. Anybody aside from Tom Fenton played a higher level than Division III.
I don't think there was anybody who was able to do a Division III. It's time to move on to cheers and jeers.
Cheers and jeers.
Richard.
I'm cheering the 24/7. It gives, forget about everything else it brings. It brings spotlight to hockey from people who aren't hockey fans. We'll watch it.
It's funny you mentioned that Bill Simmons, sports guy on Twitter, just tweeted about how he watched 24/7 and how he thinks it's fantastic for hockey.
There you go.
Ezzy.
I'm going to be cheering Dale Weiss, who got called up, New York Rangers draft pick. He was called up. He's going to play on the fourth line today. Tim, our producer, played hockey with Dale for the Gateway Flyers. Tim was a goalie, but they obviously played on the same team. So Dale Weiss, good to see another Winnipegger in the NHL.
I'm going to end off cheers and jeers by jeering the Ontario Minor Hockey Association. We talked about it earlier with the ridiculous ruling regarding the racist incident on the ice. These guys really need to look in the mirror and wake up. I mean, it's astoundingly bad how they're ruling on this case.
Now that I think of it, if the WestJet flight from Winnipeg to Phoenix, Tim could have suited up in Phoenix.
That's true. Tim, exactly. They're looking for a goalie. You played Division IV NCAA, didn't you?
There you go.
Yeah. Anyways, that's it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hawk Show. Big thank you to Cody Eakin of the Canadian World Junior team for joining us briefly there. This show will be available in podcast. You can find us on iTunes at Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can get the recap on IllegalCurve.com. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Facebook, IllegalCurve.com. Next Saturday, Christmas Day, we will be on the air. Don't forget to tune in, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, as he's going to be holding down the fort with Remus and Dave Minuk. It should be a good show. Until next Saturday afternoon, actually, we'll be off on New Year's Day as well, so Richie and I will be back January the 8th.
Big guest announcement coming for the January 8th show. Stay tuned. We have a big guest that's going to come on, so we'll let everyone know closer to the time, but look forward to that as well.
There you go. Until next Saturday afternoon, the puck drop, I believe the first game is in New York at 1 o'clock today. Good night and good luck.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk Saturday morning at 10, exclusively on Sports Radio 1290.